the X-Cast, the truth is in here. I'm once again Tony Black, your host for this third piece of coverage about Plus One, which is obviously the third episode of Season 11 of The X-Files, and for a third and final time in this episode, I'm joined by Paige Schechter.
Hi!
Good to have you back again, Paige. This time, talking about the main man himself again, Chris Carter. We talked about him with My Struggle 3, but it feels like, you know, we should revisit the guy, given he's written this episode, and also talk a little bit about the first-time director, Kevin Hooks, who came on board to direct this episode based on Chris's script. I don't know about you, Paige. I think he did a pretty good job, considering he's never directed an episode of The X-Files before.
I thought he did a great job. He brought a style that's a little bit different, but also familiar in the X-Files vein. And so it didn't feel jarring, but it didn't feel complacent.
No, it didn't. And he's reading a little interview that was done on, I think it was Sci-Fi with him, about this. He was talking about how somebody had said to him, you know, are you a big X-Files? Were you a big X-Files fan back in the day? And he said, well, not really. You know, given I'm doing lots of other things and stuff like that. In the past, I never really got a chance to watch it. So he came on board. He watched a few, I think, but then he came on board. He wasn't a fan. But then when he came on board, you know, he took the ball and run with it. You know, he clearly did a bit of research. He clearly looked at the show and how, you know, it might be shot. And, you know, I mean, because in the past, I mean, you'll know this as a big fan. There have been times back in the day that you've had first-time directors come onto this show and they just don't get it at all. You know, they really don't track with this, and it was so refreshing to see a guy come on and just get it, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, we had those back in the day where you'd see this director one time and then you never saw him again because he didn't do something that felt like the X-Files.
I think part of it is that he's very experienced. I mean, if you look at his IMDb, this guy has been directing TV for years, and he's done majority of you know, huge episodes, you know, huge shows. He's done things like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He's done Scorpion with Robert Patrick. He's done Castle, Person of Interest, The Good Wife, Supernatural, you know, it just Prison Break, 24, Alias, Lost. He's done it all, you know, over the last few years, and not just TV, but he's done a lot of movies in the past, and, you know, things like this. And I'm a big fan of his for one movie. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen this. This is going back a bit, Paige, but this is one of my favorite films, and it is really random, and people are going to seriously doubt me, I think, after this. But Kevin Hooks directed Passenger 57 with Wesley Snipes.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I love that film. That is my favourite Wesley Snipes film by far. It's great. It's because it's a plain hostage action thriller with Wesley Snipes as this cool, you know, detective who ends up having to try and save this plane. But it's just so fun. It's so fun. It's so 90s. It's really, it's got jazz, on the soundtrack. It's just cool. It's just great. I love Passenger 57. I could talk about it all day, but I won't. It's an X-Files podcast.
So, yeah, so you're not just sitting around watching Notting Hill because you're a...
Because I'm a big romantic, as we've established.
Yes, because you're a big romantic. But, you know, what's really interesting about this is the titles, the names you just said, his credits, are so much more like My Struggle 3. And here we're getting back to classic X-Files, and he's coming in and he's delivering this kind of episode without all those kind of, without jump cuts and zooming in and out and all this other stuff. It's really a credit to him.
No, it is. And I think it's probably down to his weight of experience, you know, and because he's, you know, it's interesting because quite a lot of the shows that he's actually gone on and done, you know, and he's been directing since like the 80s. So, you know, you're going back along, you know, he was doing things like V, you know, back in the 80s, the alien invasion drama, you know.
Yay, V!
Yeah, V, and like 21 Jump Street and all these shows that people were in, Alien Nation, you know, he did an episode of. So even before the X-Files started, you know, he was directing things of note, you know, so he was already known, and he's just been going for years and years and years. And I think it's somebody with that level of experience who has done almost every genre you can imagine, really, and especially directed on shows that were direct influences, you know, from the X-Files, things like, even though it's enormously different, Lost and J.J. Abrams is, you know, completely inspired by the X-Files in many ways. You know, Alias, again, by J.J. Abrams. These all stem from inspiration of the X-Files. So it feels like it's a cyclical thing. He's come back home. He's come back to a home he never knew he had, I think. And he's brought all that experience with him. So I just think he knew how to do it. It's almost a shame he's not doing any more. Much as, you know, the people who are doing the episodes to come are all great directors. You know, if we did get a season 12, it's probably not going to happen. But if we did, I'd have him back.
I would love to see another one. You know, I like his style.
Yes, he's very good. He's very, very good. So it's great that he's come on board to do this, really. And it's interesting they went to him, actually. He's an interesting choice. And, you know, Chris Carter makes interesting choices, you know, in this episode. I mean, I suppose the big question is, and we touched on this in the, you know, Tony Loves Mulder and Scully episode, but do you think that Chris Carter has redeemed himself in, or will have redeemed himself, Paige, in the eyes of the fans for this?
Well, okay, what... I don't think Chris Carter needed to redeem himself, but did he? He gave the shippers what they want. The shippers are falling all over themselves this morning. They're all smoking cigarettes. They're all, oh. It's a happy shipping community for those who actually did continue watching. I mean, like, didn't half the shippers say, I'm never watching this again?
Yeah.
After that aired. But he gave them what they wanted, but he also kept it in the Chris Carter realm, which I really respect him for, because he didn't go all hot and heavy sex scene. He gave us an X-Files version of shipper love.
The what you don't see as much as what you do see. Yeah. And I agree with you. I mean, we talked about this in the My Struggle 3 episode. I don't think he had to redeem himself. I don't think he did anything wrong, really. I think there was a level of insensitivity with a lot of that stuff, you know, and he didn't help himself in some of the interviews he did and the Reddit thing, much as I think he was piled on by a lot of people. You know, my thoughts on this are fairly well documented now, so I'm not going to rake over it all again, but I think that he didn't quite deserve what he got, I would say. So I think I don't feel like he deserves to... You know, all these people deserve to suddenly turn around and say, oh, thank you, Chris, because they don't, you know, they haven't earned that, really, given what they were giving him 2 weeks ago. But I think it just shows that I think people often misjudge the way he sees these characters. And I think that some of the decisions he made here to actually really ground this relationship, you know, and really remind people of what this relationship is. I think it's like it's almost like an example of why they needed to do 10 episodes. Because, you know, I think an episode like Plus One wouldn't have got made if you were doing six. I don't think they'd have had the
room.
That's
an excellent point.
You know, you would have had the two struggles. You would have had Darren Morgan's episode. You would have had a Glenn Morgan episode. You would have had a James Wong episode. And that'd be it.
And that's
again,
it.
You know, yep. So you would probably have had, say, if you took episodes out of this season, the episodes that probably would have made it would be My Struggle 1, this... Probably James Wong's upcoming Ghoulie, The Lost Art of Forehead Sweat, which is next week, and then My Struggle, you know, or it would have been roughly that, you know, it would have been my, yeah. So I think that Plus One is a real example of why 10 episodes has benefited massively this show.
You're right. You couldn't be more right if you tried.
Well, thanks. And it's just nice that Chris Carter gets to actually write something. I mean, I don't know about you, I think this is his best script since season 8. Easily. And a lot of people are saying this, but I think this is better than anything he's written since then.
I don't even know how I feel about that yet, because I really like to let them sit with me for a while and let them get to feel like how I know the other episodes so well, and then I can kind of figure in where I see it. But I really think it's such a strong episode for him. And there are some of the lines in there. There's already, you know, put a dimmer on that afterglow is the line of the moment. How many times do you think that got tweeted out? I mean, that brilliant. And one of my favorite lines from the episode was, "Put that pencil down." I just thought it was so funny. Like, delivery and yeah. just the way, just the fact that Mulder would say that, you know.
Yeah.
You're not put that gun, you know, usually in violent cinema, we see, you know, it's about guns and knives, and put that pencil down, you know. It's so nice. It's such a great X-Files thing.
Yeah, because you know, there are questionable, you know, elements with some of his writing. I mean, I think a lot of people are still questioning quite whether Mulder needed to slit that guy's throat in My Struggle 3. I mean, I don't think he did. Really?
I question that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I question that as much as I question how we saw it.
Yeah.
We didn't see it in an X-Files sort of manner.
No.
And put that pencil down is X-Files manner. That's what I mean by that. Like, I'm not against violence. I grew up on Nightmare on Elm Street movies. Mm. I'm not against watching violence in cinema. I just think there's an X-Files place and things that happen within that scope. And you can bring more into it. Like, we brought this great new director into it, and he made it his own. But you can't force things that don't really belong to me. You know, this is all for me. I'm not projecting this onto anyone else for my own, how I see it.
No, I agree with you. I think you're right. I think there is definitely a place and a tone that this show has and this show should have. I agree with that. And it brings us on to the point that I asked you to you know, we put a pin in the first one we were talking about, which was the way that Carter approaches some of the, you know, the decisions about Mulder and Scully and their conversations. You know, you brought up previously the whole ghosts conversation, which I think you said you thought was a bit clunky. And so that's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I think there's been a little bit of back and forth I've seen online about whether or not this... Scully's sort of real refusal to believe in ghosts and evil makes sense anymore. And where do you stand on this?
You know, in that episode, How the Ghost Stole Christmas, she says she doesn't believe in ghosts. She's confronted by ghosts, and that's what happens. And now we're reverting back to she doesn't believe in ghosts. But evil, I mean, she has seen enough evil to fill Mars. I mean, she's gotta know that evil exists, that, you know, whether or not she believes it's the devil or what it is, I find it a little unbelievable. And that's where you sort of get taken out of it. I get taken out of the enjoyment I'm having of a really solid episode. I just go, oh, clunk. You know, I always refer to it as the clunks.
Yeah, it's... I suppose there's two ways to look at this, really. I think one of the things that I think he was keen to do in this episode was really remind people of the believer-skeptic dynamic. You know, he had that kind of storyline where it is very much weird case. Mulder believes it's something strange is going on. Scully's not sure. And, you know, in a lot of the episodes, even season 10 and the first two episodes here, it's been a lot more to do with the conspiracy where you know, I think Scully would struggle these days to deny aliens exist. And she always doesn't, she never quite seems as you know, unsure of that anymore. You know, things like in My Struggle 2, where she's, you know, quite honestly, you know, it's alien DNA. She's pretty okay with this. You know, she's got to the point now where she's seen enough with aliens that I think she's pretty much a believer in that, or she thinks there's something to it. But I think I don't really see it as a betrayal of her character that she still doesn't really believe in ghosts walking about and a concept of evil, because I think that scientist in her still doesn't matter what she's seen. Scully rationalizes it through her scientific lens, and she always has. You know, whenever she was forced to try and make those leaps, like in season 8, in episodes like Badler, she always couldn't do it. She would break down. She's like, I can't do this. I can't make those leaps. I can't get there. So I don't necessarily think whatever she's confronted with, whether it is a, you know, Donny Faster, or it's, you know, the strain of evil in Empedocles, which I thought was quite, it had in a weird way had certain connections to this episode, not plot wise, but thematically. But I think I don't see it as a problem that she can't still quite get there. I think it's fairly true to her character, even if maybe she's seen a bit too much that it is a little bit of a question. I can see why people are questioning it. I just don't. I don't think it's too forced. I mean, but that's just where I come from on it, really.
I could see that. I just, you know, in the case of Ghosts, they were sort of retreading ground they've already tread.
Mm, yeah.
And, you know, we've discussed this already on the show. So why are we acting like we've never discussed this before? And I definitely see your point. I thought in season 8, you know, she sort of had to take on the believer and Robert Patrick was the disbeliever. And I thought there was a big radical shift there, but now we sort of pretend none of that ever happened.
But I think it's because in season 8, she was never comfortable with it. No, she always found it hard. That difference was never quite the same. You know, Doggett was definitely a disbeliever, but he wasn't a rational scientist. He was just a meat and potatoes guy who didn't think any of this was real because he grew up, you know, on the streets, on the beat. You know, the difference with Scully was that she was a scientist and she would come back with all the theories. So when she was having to be Mulder, she never replaced Mulder in that sense. She never just became Mulder.
Right.
And that was part of the great story arc in that she couldn't really get there. But I think... So it's always been a lot clearer with Mulder and Scully, and I think that's what he's trying to get back to, really. Which is why I think people found it a little bit awkward. I think, just going back to my point about Empedocles, I think the point there with the evil is that I liked the fact... I think there was a lot of interesting commentary that he puts in about mental illness in this, and I think one of the things he does is he tries to point out that mental illness is massively understood. You know, the Doctor describes it as like a contagion, like an outbreak of mental illness in these people who've been killing themselves. And while admittedly, you know, the fact the doppelgangers are there and are actually physically getting involved proves that this isn't an ambiguous thing of, are they seeing the doppelgangers? Are they mentally ill? No, they're not. They are victims of these psychic weirdos. But I think he's making a point about how mental illness is misunderstood and how victims quite often are people who are criminals, who are more likely to be mentally ill or have mental illness issues because of their status in society and the fact that society won't let them back in after they've committed a crime, which is a real failing of Western civilization. You know, these people weren't murderers. They weren't, you know, doing horrendous things like that. They were fairly petty criminals who Judy and Chucky were choosing to kill. And it almost, I think I put in my review, it almost feels to me like a symbolically Carter saying, this is what we do to people who are criminals who then exhibit mental illness. We get rid of them. And that struck with me.
That does. That is definitely something to think on, and I like that.
I think it's also because I work in a school, so I deal with mental illness quite a bit with young people. So I know a little bit about it as well. And it just leapt out at me in this, that he kind of equates the mental illness to the same kind of way he did with the evil in Empedocles, that it was like a disease or an outbreak, or he's fascinated by the idea of people losing control over themselves based on an external force of like a ripple sort of viral effect of darkness and evil and nature. And that comes up all the time in Chris Carter's work. And it does here, even though it's all ostensibly about doppelgangers and these creepy, you know, brother and sister, it's ultimately about the darkness within and how that can be corrupted. And it's always by some sort of external evil force. And he gets to that again, which I thought was great.
You know, I find that incredibly millenniumistic.
Yes. Definitely. Definitely. Very millenniumistic. And even though this wouldn't be a millennium episode as such, there are elements in this that feel a bit millennium at times.
It does. Definitely, I definitely agree with that. But I'm a big Millennium fan, so I see Millennium in my breakfast eggs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when we do the Millennium podcast, we've mentioned this before. Yeah, you'll be there. So that'll be a good one down the road. But on the whole, I think Chris Carter's done well. And I don't think he's writing another one now until My Struggle... Well, presuming the finale's called My Struggle 4. I think that's his next one. So... if I was a betting man, I don't think the script would be quite as good, Paige, than this. But we'll see.
We definitely will. I'll be eager to see how he handles everything that he's set up.
No, absolutely. It'll be very interesting. It'll be very different from this one. So yeah, altogether, I think we can conclude plus one is a success. So it's you know, the season's got off to a great start. So it's really exciting to be talking about it. So thanks, Paige, for coming on and talking about plus one. and hashing through this really fun episode.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure, Tony.
Oh, no, it's been great. So before we go, do you want to direct people to where they can find you and your blog, where you're going through X-Files reviews as well?
Oh, my blog is Sibling Cinema at Blogger, and my sister and I have been doing an episode-by-episode rewatch, and we just got into the fourth season, which, when you're watching season 11, a lot of things resonate when you're watching the other episodes, but we do that weekly. Pretty much weekly, except when we have something else to do. And I can also be found on Twitter as Max_Tunage or X-PAIXPay.
Awesome. Great stuff. You can find us, as always, at the X_cast on Twitter. And join our Facebook group, the X-Cast Basement X-Files Podcast Fan Groups. Join us in there for loads of chatter about the show as we continue the season. So yeah, we'll be back soon for a mailbag episode with all your listener thoughts on Plus One before we get into the next episode of the show, and also hopefully our interview with Karen Connival herself, talking about her roles in Plus One, which is going to be great to listen to. So yeah, we'll be back soon. But remember, as always, guys, trust no one.